Good afternoon, America. Welcome to Mark Levine's Inside Scoop on Washington, where we bring you all the news from the nation's capital that the government does not want you to know. And surely the Republicans who control our government don't want you to know that in state after state after state, the Republican Party, people paid for by the Republican Party, or people trying to help the Republican Party, are busy trying to prevent you from having your right to vote. It's a pretty strong allegation, and it's one that you won't hear many places outside the Inside Scoop. And yet the evidence is overwhelming in state after state after state. Now, this hour is a very important hour. I'm going to be able to interview two people who I've been working on interviews for the last couple months, in fact, and they are the state election officials of Florida and of Maryland. I'm interviewing the press secretary, for Secretary of State Glenda Hood of Maryland, I'm interviewing the press secretary for the Secretary of State Glenda Hood of Florida. That's hard to say. I'm doing that for obvious reasons. Florida is quite likely to be in 2004, similar to Florida of 2000. It may well come down to one state, and that state may well be Florida. And if that happens, Glenda Hood, who was appointed by Governor Jeb Bush, the brother of our president, to replace Katherine Harris, will likely become as famous a person as Katherine Harris. After all, Katherine Harris, at least, was elected prior to the 2000 elections. But now the Secretary of State of Florida, the official that controls elections, is appointed by none other than George Bush's brother. Now, obviously, George Bush could have appointed someone beyond repute, someone who is not affiliated with either party, some respected independent, but he didn't. Glenda Hood is a Republican. She is the former mayor of Orlando. She is, in fact, a Bush elector in the 2000 elections. So when the Supreme Court said that all the Florida electors go to the Republicans, even though the voters of Florida preferred Al Gore, Glenda Hood was one of those Bush electors that voted for Bush in 2000. No one can argue that she is unbiased, and yet she is in charge of Florida's voting system. In the latter half of the hour, I'm going to have on the air Jenny Nash, the press secretary, the spokesperson, if you will, for Glenda Hood, who's going to explain Florida voting procedures. Now, Jenny Nash did not want callers to interrupt our interview, so it is a pre-recorded interview. I'll be playing that in the latter half of the hour, but you'll have a chance to talk about it afterwards at some length. But in the first half of the hour, you will definitely have a chance to call in. The person I'm inviting on the air is the person in charge of elections in Maryland. Her name is Linda Lamone, and she is the election supervisor for the entire state of Maryland. Now, Maryland, unlike Florida, I don't expect to be controversial in the presidential race or in the senatorial race. In fact, Maryland is a reliably Democratic state. I expect it to go for the Democrats again. But what's interesting, and the reason I've invited Linda Lamone on, is because she is a big supporter of electronic voting, specifically the Diebold election machines. And the machines in Maryland will not have a paper receipt. Now, we know if you have a paper receipt, that makes the election machines tamper-proof. If someone commits fraud or hacks into them, or even if just the machines malfunction, you got those paper receipts, you can do a recount the old-fashioned way, the way we elected George Washington, in fact, with paper. But Linda Lamone, for reasons that I'm not sure I understand, though I'm going to ask her certainly on this program, has not supported the paper record. And I'm not quite sure why. And of course, since Maryland's close by Washington, D.C., it's easier to get someone like Linda Lamone on the air. Again, she's a supervisor of elections for the entire state, and she is open to your questions. So let me encourage you to call in right now before she gets on the line. Her toll-free number is 877-57-SCOOP. 877-57-SCOOP. That's the toll-free line here to the Inside Scoop. And you'll be able to ask the supervisor of an entire state, the person in charge of Maryland electors, how is it that she is relying on electronic voting? I'll be asking questions, but again, you'll be welcome to too. And then in the latter half of the hour, my extraordinary interview with Jenny Nash, the elections official of Florida, who tries to justify her state's voting procedures, whether it's the felons list or the fact that they require you to check a specific box, even if you sign to say you're a citizen, if you don't check that box, they still don't let you vote. Why they're not going to let you vote if you vote in the wrong precinct. Every single roadblock, well, not every one, in fact, because she cut off the interview, but every single roadblock that I could mention in 20 minutes to voting in Florida, Jenny Nash is going to defend in the latter half of the hour. You won't want to miss that. Before we get to Linda Lamone of Maryland, though, I need to tell you about some other states. It's not just Maryland. It's not just Florida. In Wisconsin, they are refusing. The Republican County Executive of Milwaukee is actually printing fewer ballots than in 2000 or 2002. The Republican just doesn't think enough people will come to vote. They are not printing enough ballots. If more people come to vote than there are ballots in this very Democratic place, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, I don't know what's going to happen. In South Dakota, you have Republicans who are filling out forms for college students, and you're required to have an ID to vote in South Dakota or a notary signature. They're filling it out with notary signatures and letting those people get by. At the same time, as we know, the Democrats are not being allowed to get by in Florida. That'll be in the latter half of the hour. But it's in state after state after state, there is an organization called Voters Outreach of America. This is a Republican organization, and it's been caught red-handed throwing away Democratic votes. Basically, they ask you if you want to register to vote. If you say you're a Republican, they turn it in. If you say you're a Democrat, they tear it up. This has been happening in Pennsylvania, Minnesota, Michigan, Ohio, West Virginia, Florida, Nevada, and Arizona. It's a very serious concern, and even more serious because some of them are going around calling themselves America Votes, which is a Democratic organization. People out there are out there to affect the election. Voters Outreach of America, there is an FBI criminal investigation. I hope those people are charged. I hope they're put in prison. But there definitely are people out there that are determined to prevent you from having your right to vote. And it's the job of elections officials to try to stop them. And that's why I'm very pleased to have, as my first guest, Linda Lamone, the supervisor of Maryland. She is in charge of all elections in the state of Maryland. And if you want to call in and ask her some questions, feel free to do so. The toll-free number is 877-57-SCOOP. Ms. Lamone, thank you very much for coming here on the Inside Scoop.
You're welcome. Good afternoon.
Thank you. Especially, I know you're very busy in this pre-election period and for taking the time to talk with us. I want to talk, first of all, about the thing that I think has been most controversial with regard to elections in Maryland, and that is the electronic voting machines. I'm sure you're aware there's a lot of anxiety among voters out there that fear that without a paper record, their votes won't be counted. What can you do to help allay their anxiety?
Well, Mark, the voters should know that the Maryland voting system is probably the most secure voting system in the nation. We've had several risk assessments done of the voting system by outside independent firms. True, they identified some risks, but also true is that we have mitigated them, and we have our own security experts that have looked at everything we've done, and we also have the judicial system of the state of Maryland, and everyone agrees that the system is reliable and secure.
Well, let me ask you this. We've all had computers, and I don't know anyone that's had a computer that hasn't had a bug or a malfunction or a failure to boot or some problem that happens from time to time with electronic machines. What's to prevent there from being some malfunction that you've tried to think about but you haven't, and that just causes a whole bunch of votes to be lost?
Well, the votes wouldn't be lost because of the way the system works. The voting system in the polling place is not a computer. It's merely a tabulator. And it has redundant storage in it, and it's been thoroughly tested, and as all of the studies that have looked at the system have concluded, is that it counts 100% accurately. So, and it's important to note that the voting system in Maryland is never connected to the Internet, neither the units in the polling place or the servers at the election offices that accumulate the votes. None of that is connected to the Internet. We also have done extensive testing on the voting equipment over the summer, and it's still undergoing testing. Anything, of course, can have a problem, including the voting system used in other jurisdictions. We are taking the additional step this year of conducting what we're calling parallel testing on Election Day. We will be randomly selecting voting units from the counties, bringing them back here to this office, and having a team of people vote a scripted ballot, and then comparing the results from the scripted ballot to the tallies on the voting system at the end of the day. And this is to allay the fears that anybody has inserted something into the program that will affect the votes on Election Day.
Ms. Lamone, I have no doubt of your personal integrity and that you're going to try to do what you can to make Maryland elections free and fair. But there are all kinds of people, there are thousands of people, maybe hundreds, maybe you can tell me, who will be overseeing this election. You cannot be in every precinct at once. What is to prevent someone who is not honest, just to be fair, someone who's trying to commit fraud, trying to add to either the Republicans or the Democrats, from going in, maybe an elections official, maybe someone else, typing in a code and increasing the electronic ballot for one candidate or the other?
Well, first of all, they have to get access to the voting units or access to the server, and everything is password protected. And there's only two people in this state, in the entire state, that have supervisory access to any of the voting system parts, and those two people are my security officers here at the state board. And without that password, that level of password, you simply cannot get into a large portion of the servers, and you cannot get into the innards of the voting units.
Okay, but what about the possibility that the voter misuses the machine or makes a mistake? I know, for example, that Senator Mikulski of Maryland, certainly not someone who's uneducated by any stretch, was trying out a voting machine in some demonstration, correct me if I'm wrong, and she meant to vote one way, and her hand brushed over the machine, and she voted another way. Isn't that a possibility for concern?
Not really, because the system operated the way it's supposed to. If she touched the area of the screen where it's activated to record a vote or show a vote by mistake, all she had to do is what she did do was untouch that portion and select the different, I believe she was voting on a ballot question, select the answer that she wanted. I mean, the voting system is sensitive, sure. But the voters are always given the opportunity to review what they've done to make sure they haven't made a mistake before they cast their ballots. The last screen that they'll see is a review ballot screen, and they can go back and forth between the pages on the ballot as many times as they feel comfortable before they actually cast their ballot. So voters need to take some responsibility and make sure that what they've chosen is what they really want to vote for.
Well, many advocates I know argue that at the end of the day, the only way to have a complete tamper-proof ballot, one that we know if the electricity goes out or something happens with the machines, we have a vote counting the way people have expressed their views, they can check it for themselves, would be a paper receipt. Now, I know some of these machines can be fitted with a paper receipt that comes out. You could put it in a glass chamber so no one could touch it, but at least they could see their vote, and if there's a mistake, they could call it to someone's attention. Why not, just to be safe, go the paper route?
Well, I mean, there's no reason that we can't, but my issue is with the inconvenience to the voters. The paper receipt, as you call it, from the 2002 gubernatorial general election, we're able to print this out after we close the election, was about 5.5 feet long for one voter. So that means that the voter is going to have to stand at the voting unit and actually review a 5.5 foot long piece of paper, comparing it to the votes on the review vote screen.
Well, I mean,
it's going to take time. Now, they did an experiment out in Nevada Nevada's primary, and only about 3% of the voters actually looked at the piece of paper. So it isn't really, it's not voter verified. And secondly, you've got to have printers that are capable from running 7 o'clock in the morning till 8 o'clock at night. The voting system that's currently in production in Nevada will not let the voter leave the poll or cast their ballot until the entire piece of paper has finished printing. That means the voter's going to have to stand there and wait. And the printers are going to break, the printers are going to jam, the printers are going to run out of paper. And while the voter is standing there wanting to get out of the polling place and get to work, a technician is going to have to come over and either fix the printer or put more paper in there. And when the technician walks over, the technician is going to be looking at the live ballot on the screen, exactly the selected They cherish the privacy of their vote. And I think that the people that are for the paper trail need to take a step back and look at some of the practical implications that it has.
You raised some strong concerns. Let me go to some of my callers and give them a chance to ask you some questions. Caller, you're on the air. Mark Levine and Linda Lamone. What's your first name? Where are you from?
Hi, this is Bert from Minnesota.
Hi, Bert. You have a question for the Supervisor Lamone of Maryland?
Yeah, a couple of them, actually. The first one is she's raising kind of technical concerns about things that are very easy to solve. Take, for example, you could easily build, like, more or less a screensaver into your voting terminal, and that when the guy approaches to put in more paper into these ballots that I guess use way too much to be convenient, the technician says, all right, I'm about to enter you into your place. Can you please push this button and make the screen go blank? So this is a non-issue. The issue is she familiar with Avi Rubin's research, A-V-I-R-U-B-I-N?
I don't know. Ms. Lamone?
Oh, yes. I'm familiar with his outdated research.
Outdated research. Well, he went into a voting terminal that Diebold put out and not only broke into the system, adding 10,000 or so votes to the other guy, he made it so that you couldn't tell that he had ever been there.
No, he did not do that.
Okay, Ms. Lamone?
He did not do that. What he did was he found some of the Diebold source code on the web and analyzed it and made assumptions without knowing all the facts. He did not have access to the voting system.
So he predicted, Ms. Lamone, that he could break in, but he didn't actually break in. Is that what you're saying?
That's correct.
And you think that the prediction that he could break in has been fixed in some way?
Absolutely.
Because of specific source code?
And and Professor Rubin has since said that he believes that we've made it a secure system.
Bert, I got several people that are hanging on the line. I want to give them a chance to call in, too. But thank you very much for your call. Caller, you're on the line with Mark Levine and Linda Lamone.
Hello, Mark. My name is John from Dartmouth.
Hi, John. You have a question for Linda Lamone?
Yes. Well, thank you for being on the show. But I've got to tell you, it sounds like you've tried to cover all the bases and you're doing the best job you can, but I don't think the country can go through another incident like the 2000 election. And I just feel like we're not going to have one Florida this time. I think we're going to have five or six of them. And even though with everybody trying their best and honest attempts, I don't think these systems are up to par. I don't believe the experts throughout the country, the IT experts, have faith in them. And, you know, I'd gladly wait for a printout if I knew the right man was in the president's seat right now, and I knew that by that mistake of not waiting, we'd end up at war.
Ms. Lamone, why not, for those voters who are very concerned about their ballots, why not let those voters write an old paper ballot like we elected George Washington with an X in the box of whoever they want? For those voters who are particularly concerned, why not allow that option?
Well, in Maryland, we have a law that says there shall be a single unified voting system for the polling places in the state. And this actually was litigated a couple of weeks ago in the circuit court here in Maryland. And the judge said that it was not permissible under state law to offer the voters an alternative voting method.
Now, I trust you're doing everything you can, but I know some state officials disagree with you. In California, isn't it true that they banned these Diebold election machines?
Yeah.
Why do they disagree with you here? What's the difference of opinion?
No, they're using them in California in all the counties. They decertified them and then recertified them. So they will be used in November in California.
So they decertified them because because you could tamper with them, and then they decided they changed something? Is that what happened?
I'm not sure I understand all the facts of what happened in California, but it had to do more with the county vendor relationships than it did with the voting equipment itself.
I didn't read anything about them recertifying them.
I didn't either, John, but we'll look it up, and I'll take Ms. Lamone at her word, and if it's whether it's true or not, we'll print it on the blog afterwards. Thanks very much for your call, John. I appreciate it. Caller, you're on the air with Mark Levine and Linda Lamone.
Hey, thanks for having me. I got a question, or a couple questions real quick. First of all, the tests that are run on these machines, certifying tests, are the results and are the procedures and the results available to the people?
In other words, can the public look at these certifications to make sure that maybe someone who's more tech savvy than I to know that everything's being done fairly? Is that possible, Ms. Lamone?
Yeah, and we're in the process, as a matter of fact, now of doing the public demonstration of the what we call logic and accuracy tests throughout the state, and any member of the public is more than welcome to attend. For example, there's going to be a couple of them tomorrow and a couple more on Thursday, and we encourage the parties and the public to attend them. And they certainly can look at the documentation from those tests and any other tests that we do.
Okay, and my other question is, are there a lot of people in Maryland who are expressing concern about these machines?
Not really. There are some people who are, but...
There's several lawsuits, I know.
We had a lawsuit by the ones that wanted to either decertify or have a paper trail, and they lost that lawsuit. There are some. They continue to persist to try to erode voter confidence, which I frankly think is a disservice to the citizens of Maryland, but then my life is trying to make it as easy as possible for the voters. The majority of the people that you have used the touchscreen voting absolutely love it. The blind, for the first time in the history of the state of Maryland, now are able to vote a secret ballot by using the audio features. I mean, we're now being able to supply both an audio and a visual ballot in alternate languages in Maryland. So it has a lot of great features. The state of Georgia, I know, showed that between the U.S. Senate race in 1998, when they used a variety of voting technology in Georgia, and the 2002 Senate race, about 80,000 more votes were counted than in 1998. That's a lot more people who were able to participate in the democracy as a result of this technology.
And Ms. Lamone, go ahead, Carr. Go ahead.
But see, the funny thing about us in the state of Georgia is that, you know, we'll never really ever know if those votes were accurate, because we don't really have a paper trail here in Georgia.
I think that's what concerns a lot of people, Ms. Lamone. It's that you can't really check it out. You can't really do a recount. You can't check to make sure. I mean, if a machine is mistabulating, how would we know it?
Well, how would you know that the machines that are tabulating the punch card systems, the machines that are tabulating the optical scan equipment are operating properly? No one knows.
Because you can take those ballots and you can count them and put it through?
When you're looking at the Florida 2000 election and you see the picture of the guy holding up a punch card, they're not recounting the entire election. They're just looking at the votes or the ballots where there was a question of voter intent.
Okay, but ma'am, you're taking a problem, and your solution is much worse than the problem. You've tried to make a solution with a lot of bells and whistles, but the bottom line is you don't really know. You just don't know for sure. And I don't. What really irritates me is your total disdain for the voters' confidence.
Our system has undergone more rigorous examination and testing than any other voting system in the United States. And no risk assessment has been done on any other kind of voting system in the United States. So no one knows how accurate those systems are. The optical scan equipment can be adjusted so that it only counts certain types of mark. There's all kinds of possibilities, and nobody's even discussing them.
Well, Ms. Lamone, let me ask you this, because I'm not sure I understand it. How many different choices do you have on the Maryland ballot? This one, less than 10, I would say. 10, maybe?
No.
It depends on the jurisdiction, obviously.
Yeah, it's a short ballot.
It's a short ballot. So why would it take 5.5 feet of paper per voter? I don't get that. I mean, you can write down 10 names or 5 names or, you know, president, senator, yes, no, in 5 lines. Why would it take 5.5 feet?
No, I said that the example I used was from the gubernatorial 2002 general election.
And it took 5.5 feet for each voter?
Yes, it did.
Why? I mean, I just know if I have a calculator and I got 5 things to add up, it has 5 lines.
Well, because the gubernatorial ballot is a much bigger ballot. And it had, like, I don't know, 7 or 8 ballot questions on it as well as the candidates.
Oh, you have to print the entire ballot question? You can't just print yes on number 7, no on number 8. Is that what you're saying?
No. It did not contain any ballot question language. It just said ballot question 1, yes, no. Ballot question 2, yes, no.
So fix the problem.
had a descriptor of what the ballot question was, it would have made it longer.
Yeah, I just don't understand how that equals 5.5 feet. I mean, it seems to me you could put that all on one, you know, piece of paper. I'm not sure why.
Well, because it's a longer ballot. It has a lot more candidates on it than a presidential general election does.
Okay.
It has all the House of Delegates, the Senate, all the local county races, plus all the federal races.
All right, caller, one last question, then I got another caller hanging on. Go ahead, caller.
The software is proprietary, correct?
Yes.
And who loads the ballots onto the machines?
We do. Diebold never touches the software after it's been loaded onto the equipment. And we then, after we load the software, or they load the software onto the voting units, then we have an independent firm come through, independent verification firm come through to make sure that it's been loaded correctly.
And who is the independent firm?
We used BSC, which is a Maryland firm, last time, and we have a new one on contract now. I can't remember the name of it.
Okay, thank you, Mark.
Thank you very much for your call. These firms that do independent verification, I hope they're not of any partisan bent. One of the concerns I know of Democrats is that the president of Diebold has even said, and it's a bad thing that he said, but he said that we will deliver Ohio for George W. Bush, a very unfortunate thing for a president of a voting machine to say. Are these independent firms, are they nonpartisan?
I didn't check their voter registrations out, Mark. You're getting too paranoid on this.
Well, no, but I mean, look, it's one thing to – I don't mean check out how the individuals voted, but I mean just that these are people who've made public statements in support of one candidate or the other.
I mean, they're firms that have to qualify under international standards in order to be worked. So I don't know what their political affiliation is.
Okay. Let me go to another caller. Caller, you're on the line with Mark Levine and Linda Lamone.
Yeah, this is 464 from Michigan.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm trying to understand this security of the servers. If I understand what she said, there are administrators to these servers, and you're just talking about a password security?
No, we have various levels of security for the servers. The very basic one is that they must be kept under lock and key at all times, both an internal to the server and an external to the office log are kept as to who has access to them. The people that have access to them all must undergo a criminal background check. And then there are various levels of passwords or access that are available. The very basic one would only give them the ability to go in there and do very basic things. It would not give them access to or higher level access. And highest level access, which gives you virtually total ability to look at the server, only two people in the state of Maryland have that.
But wouldn't someone be able to maybe not intervene on a large scale, except for those two people, but intervene on a minor scale? I know there were some tests, and you can tell me why those are inaccurate or wrong, but where they went in and they and maybe this is the Avi Rubin, I'm not sure, but went in and were able to increase vote totals by a certain number in a precinct. What's to prevent someone, you know, from someone locally, say, someone maybe an election official or maybe just a sophisticated hacker from going in there and monkeying with the machines?
Well, they'd have to get access to them first. Secondly, we would know about it. Third, we do what we call a hash of the software, and that is both before and after the election. And we have filed the source code with an escrow agent, and it's also on file with the National Institute of Standards and Technologies. But the basic answer is it's not accessible except to a very limited number of people who have had their backgrounds examined to make sure that they're reliable.
Now, at the end of the day, I assume someone goes to the machines and records the numbers, you know, 1,700 votes for this candidate, 1,400 for this candidate, and reports them to the Maryland state officials. Is that right?
Basically, yeah.
Okay. And if a voter or two or three want to observe that procedure to make sure that that election official is accurately reading the data, is that possible?
Well, the answer is yes and no. There's two levels. In the polling place itself, the poll workers will be accumulating or taking, either accumulating the results onto one voting unit for transmission of encrypted data, or they will be taking the memory cards out of each voting unit and transporting them to the election office. But before they do that, they print out a totals tape from each machine, so that and in the polling place are what we call poll watchers. And those people are members of the public, representatives of the parties or the candidates, and they are there to observe all of this. And they are also reporting the print totals and comparing them with later results that are accumulated at the central office. So that once the data is transmitted to the election or the county office, most of the counties in Maryland usually have a media center set up where people can watch what's going on.
464, as you call yourself, is there anything else?
Yeah, I'm wondering what her personal legal liability is, if there's any credibility breakdown in the election.
It's a sharp question. Ms. Lamone, I mean...
Well, I could be held accountable in my official capacity as chief election administrator or chief election official for the state.
Okay.
Do you have the right to conduct investigations of any of your subordinates?
I do, and I also have a state office that's available to me for that kind of, it's called the Maryland State Prosecutor.
I want to thank you very much for your call. Ms. Lamone, you've taken some very tough questions, and I want to thank you very much for taking the time to answer those questions here on the Inside Scoop.
You're welcome, Mark. Talk to you soon.
One of the things I found interesting in what Ms. Lamone was saying is that at the very least there is some paper record, in that at the end of the day there is a printout in all of the precincts. I agree that it's not so much Maryland that's my concern, but it was good to have the head of an elections, a state elections official coming here to talk about. I have much more serious concerns with the state of Florida. And today I'm not playing any commercials. I'm going to go directly to my interview with Jenny Nash. She is the press secretary for Secretary of State Glenda Hood of Florida. I'm going to play that interview in full, and there'll be some time afterwards for your calls. Let me quickly call her. You're on the line. Do you have a quick comment?
Well, I guess I didn't get in time for your guest. This is Dave on your internet, and the main question that I'd like to see you posing is, if it should in the end come down that the voting machines are all going overwhelmingly for, say, Bush, and the rest with paper trails are maybe a lot closer or favoring Kerry, is there a legal remedy for that? What would we do if... Why would all the voting machines be going to Bush? That would be the question.
Well, it's a great question, Dave. Look, this is not the only show I'm going to devote to this topic. It was a rare and wonderful occurrence to get these election officials both today. But I assure you, in fact, later on this week, I want to explore some of these many other voting things that I barely had a chance to talk about in all these other states. This issue will not die, and I think you'll be very interested, and I'm afraid probably not too happy with the interview I'm about to play with the Florida elections officials. So listen in, Dave. We're going to play. Go. Yes?
I say I will be listening. I enjoy your program very much.
Thank you very much, Dave. I'm now going to play an interview I had this morning with Jenny Nash. She is the press secretary for Secretary of State Glenda Hood. She did not want call-ins. Maybe she thought I would be less harsh than some of my callers. If so, I think she may be surprised. The interview is about 20 minutes long, and if you want to call in, we'll have about 5 minutes left to comment on it. This is, I think, a very interesting interview, and it won't be the only time I play it. I think I'll be playing it again, and we can discuss it at length. But here we have my interview with the representative of the Secretary of State of Florida. Her name's Jenny Nash. She represents, she's the spokesperson for Glenda Hood. Glenda Hood is the woman appointed by Jeb Bush, President Bush's brother, to replace Katherine Harris. And Glenda Hood was an elector for Bush in 2000. As you listen to this interview, listen to how Florida is doing its best to make it difficult for voters to vote.
Your office said we're ex-felons.
Yes, this is Mark Levine.
Hold on 1 second. We got two things going at once. Here we go.
Hello, Ms. Nash.
Yes.
This is Mark Levine, host of the Inside Scoop Radio Show. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. Got time to do our interview right now.
Yeah, that's fine. Tell me again what we're talking about.
We're talking about Florida election procedures.
That's fine.
Okay. We're recording this phone call.
Okay.
All right. I want to thank you very much for submitting to this interview.
Thank you for having me.
As you have said in some of your public statements, quote, "We expect people will be watching Florida very closely, and we're very proud of what we've done." And I want to agree with you that people will be watching Florida very closely this fall during the election. And I wanted to interview you to assure Floridians and Americans that the voting procedures will be free and fair and that we'll have an honest election.
Absolutely.
Okay. Let me go over a number of things that have been criticized of your boss, Glenda Hood. One is the issue of the so-called felons list.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you explain to our listeners what the felons list is, what it was, what it does?
Well, the 2001 legislature mandated that the Division of Elections develop a central voter database, which we did. And under Florida law, if you are a convicted felon and you have not had your rights restored, you are not eligible to be a registered voter. And so what the original set of names that went to the supervisors were a starting point for them to begin their process, which is mandated by law, because the supervisors of elections on the local levels are mandated to perform list maintenance on the voter rolls. And it was a list of statewide felon convictions of names that reached a certain threshold. When we developed the felon matching component in the central voter database, we did that along with the NAACP. And if a name reached a certain threshold, it was then sent on to the supervisors for them to continue their research process to determine if, yes, that person was indeed a convicted felon, or no, that person was not. And here in Florida, names are only added to the voter rolls and removed from the voter rolls on the local levels by the supervisors of elections.
Now, to what extent does the Secretary of State control the process for the local supervisors?
She does not control it at all. The supervisors of elections are independently elected officials. They answer to their constituents. The Secretary's role is to give them guidance if they have any questions on the election laws, to interpret the laws. We certify the voting systems and give them viable choices for the counties to then purchase.
Now, in the 2004 election coming up, mm-hmm. Secretary of State Glenda Hood, your office created a list of 47,000 people who your office said were ex-felons, but the Miami Herald and other organizations found that at least 2,000 of them were not felons.
Okay, again, like I said, those names reach a certain threshold. Okay, first of all, it's important to note that that list is not being used anymore.
Right.
But it was not in 2000 when the supervisors received the names, they were told that these names are to be removed from the rolls. The list that earlier this year went to the supervisors, as I said, was a starting point for them to begin their process. There were names on the list that were definite matches, and there were names on the list that were not. That is a process that the supervisors have to go through to determine.
And on that list, it's been reported that of the 47,000 people listed, 22,000 were black and some 60 were Hispanic. Is that accurate?
I do not know what the numbers were, but there were some concerns brought up about the Hispanic classification. As soon as those concerns were brought up, Secretary Hood stopped the felon matching component of the central voter database. Those names are not, that list is not being used. However, the supervisors of elections continue to perform list maintenance. They continue to receive felon conviction information from their local clerks of the courts. However, that list is no longer in use.
Well, no, I have no problem with people who are actually felons being removed from the voting rolls. I understand that's Florida law. Actually, I may have a problem with that law, but I understand it's the law and it's your job to enforce the law.
Mm-hmm.
But originally, isn't it true that the Florida Secretary of State didn't want to make this list public? And so the public couldn't judge and see whether or not they were on the list if they wouldn't know until they showed up on Election Day.
Well, Mark, that's some misinformation that's been widely reported. At that time, Florida law said, okay, this is what's in law that is made by the legislature. Secretary of State does not make the law. that the voter registration rolls, that information could only be supplied to specific groups stated in the law, political parties, candidates, government agencies. So if we, at that time, we were, people were requesting that information, but by law, we were unable to give it out. A court overruled that, and as soon as they made their decision, we then gave it to the people who wanted it.
But just to be clear, it wasn't your department's decision to scrap the list until after the court made the list public, and after then the media found all the errors in the list.
When the concerns were brought up about the Hispanic classification, yes, Secretary Hood pulled the list.
Okay. Now, if I'm told that by some people that some of these names are originally on the 2000 felons list. There are a number of people, I'm sure you know, Ms. Nash, that were not felons in 2000, but nonetheless were prevented from voting in 2000 because they were on this list.
I'm sorry. Secretary Hood was not the secretary in 2000, and I really can't comment on things that took place back then because I was not with the department in 2000.
Okay. But are you giving people a chance to get back on the rolls? What does someone have to do if they're not a felon and they find out that they're on some list, even one, either the one, original one compiled by you or maybe one used by the supervisors? Let's say I'm just a voter and I've registered for a long time and I happen to have the same name as a convicted felon. Now, my name, Mark Levine, is a fairly common name.
Right.
Would I know before Election Day that I've been put on this list?
Well, the supervisors go through quite a process to research the names. I mean, it just because you would have a first and last name similar to somebody else would not keep you from remaining or being taken off the voter rolls. I mean, they go through quite a process. Supervisors err on the side of the voter. Unless they are 100% sure that a voter is a convicted felon and should not be on the list, that voter would remain on the rolls.
Well,
but my advice to anybody who has a question about their registration, whether it be because they moved or for any types of questions, would be to call their local supervisor of elections. Because that is the best place to get the most accurate information.
I think that's very good advice. I agree with you. My concern is that in 2000, there were
Mark,
people...
Mark, you know what? We're in 2004 now.
I understand
so
that.
So if you want to interview me and ask me questions about current situations, I'd be happy to do that. But again, Secretary Hood was not the secretary in 2004. I was not with the department in 2000, and I was not with the department in 2000. So you'd really need to speak to somebody more familiar with 2000 if that's a subject you want to talk about.
No, I understand that, and I am talking about the 2004 election. My point was that in 2000, there were people who were on the felon voting list who weren't felons, and I guess my question is, how can a voter, if let's say someone is on a felons list, is that voter notified by the supervisor of elections, you will not be allowed to vote on November 2nd, 2004, because
again,
your name is on this list?
Is no longer being used.
No, but
so,
they're local lists, right? The supervisors, local supervisors have local felons lists.
If it's a local felon conviction, then it would have been a conviction that just happened the month before, and yes, that name would be taken off the rolls.
But my question is, would the voter be notified that their name is removed just in case there's a mistake?
That happens on the local level, so you would need to contact the supervisors of elections to discuss their process.
So there's no particular policy by the Secretary of State's office one way or the other about notifying a voter if their name has been removed from the rolls?
Because that does not happen with the Department of State. The supervisors of elections on the local levels are the elected officials that conduct the list maintenance.
Okay, so if someone goes to the polls on Election Day and they're not a felon and they find, lo and behold, they're being told they can't vote because they're being claimed to be a felon, I assume they can vote provisionally?
They can vote provisional ballot, yes, and then the canvassing board would make that decision.
Okay, so people need to know that if for some reason you're told you can't vote, you can still vote provisionally. That's part of the Help America Vote Act.
That's correct, and it's not just having to do with felon convictions. I mean, for any reason, if you show up at the precinct that you believe is your correct precinct and are told that you're either not on the rolls for whatever the reason may be, then yes, you can vote provisional.
Now, what if you walk into the wrong precinct, the one next door? You know, some of these precincts are divided by streets. They're very close. Maybe you go to a precinct where you voted in the past and the lines have been changed, and you happen to be, a few streets off. Can you still vote provisionally?
If you believe that is your precinct and you are not on the voter roll, like I said, for any reason, you would be able to vote provisionally. However, if you are in your incorrect precinct, your vote would not be counted.
How would you
Again,
know?
Again, it's the responsibility of the voters to find out where their precinct is located, find out what issues and candidates are on the ballot, and to be educated on those issues to find out where your correct precinct is. I would urge everyone listening to call your local supervisor of elections office to find that information.
Are voters given something in the mail to say where their precinct is?
Yes, it's on your voter registration card.
Okay. Now, in most states, or at least I know several states in the United States, I know it's true in California and Nevada, and I know that in Ohio there was just a court battle over precisely this issue, where the court ordered Ohio to allow people who vote in the wrong precinct to still have their votes counted. But I understand it's Florida's policy. Let me just give an example. Let's say I'm in the wrong precinct, and, okay, I can't vote.
Again, let me just stop you right there, because a court ruled on this last week.
Oh, they did.
If you are, you must vote in your correct precinct. And if you are in your incorrect precinct and you vote provisional for whatever reason, obviously your name would not be on the rolls if you're in your incorrect precinct, your vote will not be counted. You must vote in your correct precinct in Florida.
Now, is this the policy of the Florida legislature, or is this the interpretation of the Secretary of State?
That is Florida law.
That is Florida law passed by the Florida legislature.
That's correct.
Because it's interesting. I know in Ohio, the legislature passed it, but the court overturned it part of the...
Yeah, I can't really comment on the laws of other states. I'm just not familiar.
I understand that. What is the justification? I am curious, and I understand it's not your decision. It's the decision of the legislature. But for allowing someone who votes in the wrong precinct, I can understand if they can't vote for the local mayor if they're in the wrong place, but why can't they still vote for president, senator, governor of Florida?
You know what? You'd need to speak to the legislature about that, on what their reasoning was behind the laws that they make.
Okay. Let me move on to the question of voter registration.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I understand that in order to register in the state of Florida, you have to both sign that you're a signature and check a box. Sign that you're a citizen and also check a box saying you're a citizen.
That's correct.
And I understand it's the policy of your office that even if you sign under penalty of perjury that you're a citizen, if you don't actually check that box, your voter registration is thrown out. Is that right?
No voter registrations are thrown out. First of all, under federal law, under the Help America Vote Act, it mandates the states, one, ask the question, are you a citizen? And two, it requires that the states provide a box that the voter must check yes or no. That is federal law. It's also state law. So the box must be checked, as well as the signature at the bottom must be signed. That is, again, state law, and federal law requires that. If a voter registration form is incomplete, the supervisor must then reach out to the voter and afford them the opportunity to come in and complete their forms.
And are they allowed that opportunity even if the deadline for registration is passed?
Oh, I mean, a voter can go and complete their registration at any time, so they are then eligible to vote in the next election.
But they would not be eligible to vote in November 2004?
The book closing was October 4th for the general election.
So if someone registered on October 4th, they probably weren't notified until it was too late to fix it, I guess.
If their application was received, it needs to be into the supervisor's office and completed by October 4th. However, they should still be afforded the opportunity to come in and complete their application so they are then registered for the next election.
But not for the current November. I mean, here's the problem, obviously. You got people, they see a form, they sign, yes, I am a citizen, and these people really are citizens. We're not talking about people who have no right to vote. These are people who have a right to vote, and they fail to check a box, and it sounds to me like they can't vote in this election. Is that right?
Well, again, it's not just one box. There are eight required fields on the Florida voter registration form. Eight fields that by law are required. One of them is the citizenship box. Now, things that we have seen are that people check, when it says, are you a citizen, they check no, and then they sign the bottom. So, you know, what do you do with those forms? Or are you going to throw out that they don't have to check that they're not a convicted felon? Are you going to throw out that they don't have to provide ID or that they don't have to put their legal name and address? I mean, those are required fields by law. And the Secretary of State and the Supervisors of Elections do not have should not waive mandatory provisions of Florida and federal law. That
well,
is what the law says, and that's the law that we follow.
One of the interesting things about Florida law, and I happen to know something about it because I did look at it very carefully in 2000, is that the Florida Supreme Court has held that any of these errors should be ruled on the side of the voter, that if the voter actually has a right to vote, that if there's a mistake that doesn't affect the clear intent of the voter, that error should go to the voter. And I happen to know the Help America Vote Act, the federal law that you mentioned, also suggests with its provisional balloting that a voter that makes a mistake, as long as it's clear that that voter has every right to vote and the intent is clear, that that voter should be allowed to vote. Shouldn't we err on the side of the voter?
Yes, and as I said, as far as the voter registration forms, the voters always afforded the opportunity to come in and complete their ballot.
Well, what do they get? They get a letter back from your department saying your ballot is incomplete, please fix it?
No, I'm talking about the voter registration forms.
Right.
And again, I think what you don't understand is that the supervisors of elections in each individual county are the elected officials charged with running elections. Voter registration does not happen with the Department of State. That happens with the supervisors of elections on the local level.
But you give direction to those supervisors, right? I mean,
No, we do not. They are elected officials, and they answer to their constituents.
Okay, but my understanding is that the Secretary of State has issues directives.
Oh, I need to talk to you. Okay, Mark, I have another call waiting. Was there anything else that you needed?
Yeah, the last question I have regards electronic voting.
Mm-hmm.
What is there in place to prevent tampering with the electronic ballot?
First of all, our voting systems go through one of the most rigorous certification processes in the nation, and security is a huge part of that certification process. Then on the local levels, before every single election, every single voting system that's going to be used in the election is tested, and that is part of the testing. Those tests are open to the public. Once the machines are tested, they are then sealed, and then that seal is not broken until election day. We have used the electronic voting systems since 2002. Since then, the supervisors of elections have delivered hundreds of successful elections without any reports of equipment malfunction, and we expect nothing less in November.
Wasn't there a problem in the primary with the Democratic primary for governor, Janet Reno, and the other candidate? I forgot his name.
No, there was not. Not. I mean, there may have been some human errors, but yes. But no, we have never had one report from any of the supervisors of equipment malfunction.
And again,
with the electronic voting systems, for the first time ever, people in the disabled community are able to cast an independent ballot.
Oh, and I think that's terrific. I definitely do.
Absolutely.
I'm just questioning why not have a paper receipt to make sure that the ballot is tamper-proof, it's fraud-proof.
Currently, there is no, we're in constant contact with the vendors, and currently there is no voting machine or equipment, companion equipment that is fully developed by those vendors with those capabilities. And as soon as there is, we will certainly help them through the certification process.
That's interesting. I hadn't heard before that, because I've been told that that's something that's certainly possible. Okay, my last question is just with the counting of the votes. When it's all said and done, can there be manual recounts to check to make sure that every vote is counted?
Absolutely. We just put a new emergency rule in place that's very specific as to manual recount, and yes, that's absolutely correct.
Okay, and do all voters in Florida vote on the same system, or they vote on different systems?
There's two systems that are currently certified for use in Florida, touchscreen voting systems and the optical scan. Approximately 50% of Florida's voters vote on each of the machines.
And do the machines tend to differ by counties, with more wealthy counties having one type of machine and less wealthy having another, or are they evenly split throughout the state?
I don't know what the income level of the counties are, but once we certify the voting systems, the decision purchases are then made on the local levels, and the supervisors and the county commissions decide which systems will best serve their constituents.
Okay. One last question. I know I've said that before. This really will be my last question.
Okay, yeah. I have to go in like 2 minutes. So.
Okay. The Supreme Court in the Bush v. Gore decision suggested that there really needs to be equal voting for all Americans throughout the country and certainly for all voters in Florida. Given that there are different systems, given that different supervisors implement different ways. I understand, for example, some supervisors require that box be checked. Other supervisors don't require that box be checked. How can we ensure that, in fact, there is equal voting throughout Florida?
Well, you're talking about two things. You're talking about the voting systems and the voter registrations. As far as the voting systems, under Bush v. Gore, what that decision said is that all counties that are using the same voting systems adhere to the same standards. So the same standards are followed by all counties using the touchscreens, and the same standards are followed by all the counties using the optical scans. And that's what the law says now, and that is what the supervisors of elections are following.
Okay, and for voter registration, though...
Mark, I'm sorry, but I have to go. I'm sorry, I've had this call on hold for about 5 minutes now.
All
right.
Thank
you very much.
Thank you very much for your review. Goodbye.
Well, you heard it. That, I think, was a pretty astonishing interview with the representative of the Florida elections officials. I'm afraid the hour's gone real quick. Let me just point out the things that I noticed that were most strong here. They are doing everything they can to keep people from voting. If you sign that you're a citizen, but you don't check the box, oh, I'm sorry, you lose your right to vote. If you vote across the street from where you are supposed to be voting, oh, I'm sorry, you lose your right to vote. Even though the federal law is that you have a right to vote provisionally. Okay? If you are on a felons list, you don't even have to commit a felony, they don't have to inform you. You will find out you're on a felons list on election day when you won't be allowed to vote. Also, did you note how she said there are different standards in different counties, that the supervisors of different counties decide what happens? Well, that's very interesting, since the whole point of Bush v. Gore was supposedly to have equal systems for everyone. What does that mean? That means in a county like the Duval County, which has Jacksonville, Florida, where you've got a central core city that is African-American and a huge suburb. In fact, Jacksonville is literally the largest city in the country in terms of area. A huge suburb, which makes the county a majority Republican county. What that means is that they can vote for a Republican election official who will decide what happens with the blacks in Duval County. And what has he decided? I'll tell you what he's decided. He's decided that there's going to be only one voting place open in this entire county. As I said, it's the largest city and area in the United States, and it's not going to be an African-American area. Sorry. In another area of Florida, in fact, they have a voting official who, when it just happened that black ministers were rounding up their flock to go and vote early on Sundays, well, he closed it on Sundays. Oh, well, sorry. Each county can decide. Counties in white areas, counties in Republican areas, have 9 or 10 different systems throughout the county. As she said, oh, well, it's the voter that's got to be careful. You got to make sure you get everything right. You got to make sure you're in the right precinct. I said, how do you know if you're in the right precinct? She said, it's on your voter registration card. Friends, do you know where your voter registration card is? I think I got mine in the back of a drawer somewhere. But if you don't find out that your precinct's wrong, what are you supposed to do? Well, you can try to vote provisionally, but oops, if you get the wrong precinct, you lose your right to vote. Now, remember, even if a Florida citizen gets through the registration hurdles, and we've already talked about the fact that if you don't check a box, even if you sign under oath that you are a citizen, if you don't check the box, they are not going to register your vote. And in fact, they're going to inform you when it's too late. Many people register right before the deadline. I'm the kind of guy that often files my tax returns on April 15th. If you register a week before the deadline, oh, well, they'll notify you after it's too late to give you a chance to vote in the next election. She says that's a requirement of the federal law. I happen to have the Help America Vote Act in front of me, and it says, and I quote, and I'll give everyone the exact citation for all you lawyers out there. It's 116 statute, page 1713, paragraph 4B, says, in complete forms, if an applicant for voter registration fails to answer the question about are you a citizen of America, the registrar shall notify the applicant of the failure and provide the applicant with an opportunity to complete the form in a timely manner
to allow for the completion of the registration form prior to the next election for federal office, subject to state law. We've already talked about the fact that Florida, according to the Supreme Court, is supposed to protect the right of voters to vote. What does all this mean? What it means is, if you vote, if you try to register a week before the voter registration deadline, and you didn't check every box because you signed under oath you weren't a citizen, and you didn't see you had to fill in the box, that they have to tell you before the election, give you a chance to fix it. That's what the federal law is. That's what this election supervisor is precisely not doing. They are doing everything they can to prevent you from voting. And I didn't get a chance to finish the interview. You could hear she was anxious to get off the phone. But I didn't get a chance to mention to her that in 2000, a year that she really doesn't want to talk about, in Martin and Seminole counties, when the Republicans didn't fill out their voter registration forms, the Republican officials filled them out for them. They didn't notify them and say, oh, you need to fill out your voter ID. You had to put your ID number in the box. They filled in the ID for them. And they only did it for Republican voters. They didn't do it for Democratic voters. My view is that every voter who is a citizen of the United States, who has a legal right to vote, should have a full and equal opportunity to vote. My friends, this is just the beginning. I really fear for Florida in 2004. I know time is up. This hour went very quick. We are not leaving this issue alone. We are going to be talking later this week about free and fair elections. It is important, and it's the kind of news you can only get on the Inside Scoop. If you are as outraged as I am, here's what you do. You go to your local election official. You make sure that you're registered. You ask them the procedures and make sure that they answer your questions. If they don't answer your questions, you go to the press. We have a right to vote in America. Nothing is more important. Whatever your view is on the Iraq War, on Social Security, on the environment, on schools, on government spending, whatever it is, whatever your view is, nothing the government does is legitimate at all unless they are freely and fairly elected by the people of the United States. The very first, most important right we have is the right to vote, and we need to defend it. I'm afraid my time is up, but we're not letting this issue alone. Tune in tomorrow for Election Tuesday. This is Mark Levine.